Do you have my cider? Asked a mellow voice behind the door. If you do, you're late.
I don't have your cider, but I know where it is, said Einan.
I hope the Rutherow Keep didn't confiscate it, said the voice. Einan heard bolts being thrown, then both big doors swung open. A man of middling height, with a big nose and a long, elaborately braided grey beard, was standing in the doorway. The ends of his bushy moustache were also braided and hung down to his chin. The man was wearing a black conical felt hat, dark blue canvas pants, and a white apron that stretched from his neck to his knees over a light blue linen shirt. His boots were thick-soled and made from bright red leather. Einan wasn't sure what a big city innkeeper was supposed to look like, but he added the man's appearance to his definition of the profession.
"Are you Taffin, sir?" asked Einan.
"I am," said the man, "and Taffy to me friends. Tell me who the two of you are, and we'll see if you'll fit in that category."
"Yes, sir," said Einan. "I'm Einan, from Haywall in the Coombe, and this is my friend Nud. He's from farther west."
"On your wander year, I see," said the innkeeper, nodding at Einan. "And you're both big uns, aren't you?"
"Yes, sir," said Einan.
Nud rolled his eyes. He knew it had been a rhetorical question, and he'd seen the innkeeper's eyebrow go up when he heard Nud's name. "What's this about knowing where my cider is?" said Taffin, staring at Einan. "Has something happened to it?"
Said Einan. "It's been delayed."
"Delayed? How? Delayed where? Will I get my shipment? I'll soon have 30 miles upstairs. There will be a revolt if they don't get Applegarth cider soon."
"Your shipment is secure," said Einan. "It's in the Blue Spiral Tower up the Rutherow."
"What would Furcher want with my cider, lad?" said Taffin. "It sounds like you've got a longer tale to tell that will go better with a mug of ale in a private room upstairs than down here on a cold stone pier in the shadows. Come in, young gentleman, and welcome. Mind your heads."
With that, the innkeeper stepped back from the door. Einan and Nud followed him into the inn's cellar storeroom, past barrels of potables and up a well-worn flight of wooden steps that came out next to the kitchen. Ahead of them was the inn's spacious common room, and to one side were several side alcoves, screened with heavy curtains that reached all the way to the floor. The common room was deserted at this hour. Guests had been fed, and serious drinkers didn't start until afternoon. But Taffin indicated they should enter the first alcove. Moments later, he joined them with 3 large mugs of foaming ale. The innkeeper took a deep swallow, and so did Nud, but Taffin noticed Einan didn't touch his mug.
"Not much of a drinker."
"No, sir," said Einan. "I try to save it for special occasions."
"Nothing wrong with that," said Taffin. "Give me a moment or two, and I'll be back with something to wet your whistle."
The innkeeper slipped out of the alcove and returned 30 minutes later with a mug of something that foamed but didn't smell like beer. When the innkeeper waved it onto Einan's nose, it smelled delicious.
"Taste it," said Taffin. "I make it with boiled water and birch bark. It's safe to drink, and you won't have a headache in the morning."
Einan tilted the mug, getting foam on his upper lip, then sipped the drink. Its flavour was even better than its smell. He'd have to bring this idea back to the Coombe. He was sure it would be popular there.
"Mmm," said Einan. Taffin smiled. "Now, lads," he said, "call me Taffy, and tell me about my cider and why you're really in my inn."
With his last comment, he turned to Nerd and added,
"How's that old reprobate Damon doing in Melancarrig, by the way?"
Nerd and Einan looked at each other, smiled and shrugged. Then they told the innkeeper well-edited versions of what had happened, with frequent interruptions for questions.
"Furcher will figure out a way to get me my cargo, I'm sure," said Taffy, when Einan and Nerd had paused to sip from their mugs. "I'll keep my eye out for my cider to arrive in the next few days."
"I hope so," said Einan.
"Dothan's involved in all this too, eh?" said the innkeeper. "You say he followed Furcher through a Roma wizard's gate?"
"I think so," said Nud.
"Her robes were purple," confirmed Einan.
Taffy frowned.
"Who knows what will come of that?"
The innkeeper wiped his hand on his beard. He poured the contents of Einan's mug of ale into his own mug and Nud's when their mugs were halfway down.
"And David and Derry's daughter. She's a wizard now, you say? Went through another gate?"
"She's a very good wizard,"
said Einan. His foam moustache made it hard to take him seriously, but Taffy didn't smile. He remembered what it was like to be 16.
They left before Dothan and Thurcher, said Nerd. We rushed here on Wyvern back from the coombe.
He drank a large swallow of ale.
We need to tell King Dario and the Conclave of Wizards in Brendinus about the Tamloch raid, but I don't know who to contact in the capital, so we're taken seriously. Damon's primary connection there of late was Dothan, and he's gone. I know he has other agents in place, but I don't know who they are.
No need to worry, said Taffy. I'll get word to the Conclave and one of the King's advisers, if he hasn't banished them all in the last 24 hours for not kissing his arse with enough enthusiasm.
Einan laughed, and foam went up his nose. He brushed it away with the back of his hand.
"What do you recommend we do?" asked Nud. "Just sit here and drink your beer?"
"That would be my advice," said the innkeeper. "The last thing you want to do is go to the capital. Word from the north is that King Tuathal of Tamloch has paid King Bajarni of the Dragonship Raiders of Bifferland 10 pounds of gold to send 500 ships to sack Brendinus. They should arrive up the Brynaven in a few days."
Einan looked at Nud. Nud looked back. They nodded.
"There's still time," said Einan.
"We have to go," said Nud. "Your gate to Melyn Carrig should be big enough."
So that's how Nud and Damon got their supplies, thought Einan.
"For what?"
asked Einan.
"For Rocky," said Nud.
"It's a big gate. As big as the double doors on the pier," said Taffy. "It has to be, to get your tons of wine and beer through. How big is your wyvern?"
"He might fit," said Nerd.
"Let's find out," said Ina.
They left the alcove and made their way down the stairs to the cellar storeroom, without waiting to see if Taffy was behind them. Chapter 6 Damon and Merry. Merry punched the man in the door with both her fists, pounding his abdomen until Salda blocked her swings and her arms moved around his neck. Merry held him like she was afraid he might evaporate.
"You're not dead! You're not dead! You're not dead! You're not dead!"
she repeated while crying tears of joy. After a few minutes, Merry pulled herself together, stopped her litany, and took 3 deep breaths. Salda kept his arms around Merry until the 3rd breath, and he held her at arm's length and took her in from foot to head.
"It's great to see you too, little sister. What are you doing here? You're not so little now."
"I came with Damon," Merry replied, "and you still look like you did the day you left on your wander year."
"A bit more mature than that, I hope," said Salda.
He wore a big smile, and his eyes were wet and bright.
"You were 25 at 16. said Merry.
The corners of her mouth turned up as she felt herself fill with joy at her brother's unexpected return to life.
"You must be 35 by now."
"Only 22, said Salda.
"Don't make me old before my time."
Merry rubbed her wet cheeks. Tanis handed Merry a linen napkin, and the younger woman dried her tears.
"Excuse me," said Damon, inserting himself into their reunion. "I need information, and we shouldn't be standing in an open doorway where anyone passing by can hear."
"I'll take care of that," said Thibaut.
Tanis escorted Salda and Merry to the trestle table, while Thibaut shut the door and reset the thick length of wood that kept it closed.
"We told you I was dead because you were too young to keep that big a secret," said Salda. "You were only 10, and our parents didn't want to risk it."
Merry affectionately punched Salda below his ribcage.
"You should have told me," she said. "If it makes a difference, I thought we should," said her brother. "I knew you could keep a secret. You never told on me when I went to visit."
"They said you'd been killed by a raiding party from the southern clanlands on your way home," said Merry.
She was leaning against Solda's shoulder and holding her brother's hands in hers, like she was afraid to let them go in case he disappeared again.
"That was the story Dar and Damon and Dothan came up with," said Solda.
"I needed to disappear from Daran to come here."
"Wait, you already know Damon?"
asked Merry.
"Of course," said her brother. "He's been working with Dar and Dothan for decades."
"Did the 3 of them talk you into being a spy?" asked Merry.
Her head was spinning as she considered the implications of what she heard, and what it meant for her understanding of her father and Dothan and Damon.
I volunteered for the job, said Solder. They needed someone to keep an eye on what's happening inside the royal palace in Rias.
And what is happening? Asked Daemon. How many mage stones did Vero's men collect, and what does he plan to do with them?
Solder kissed Merry's hands and gave him a squeeze, then turned to face Daemon. Vero doesn't say much, but some of his wizards do, especially when they've had a few glasses of wine, said Merry's brother. Tamlok's magestone mines in the Green Mountains have played out, I hear. A dozen wizards are out searching for more sources of green magestones in Tamlok territory, but so far they've been unsuccessful.
Without more green magestones, said Thibaut, as he joined them at the table, there would be no more green wizards in a generation. There were also rumours they needed lots of green magestones of any quality for one of Vero's special projects.
Daemon nodded.
I hadn't realized the shortage was that severe, he said. How did Vero discover green magestones at the quarry west of the Coombe?
Completely by accident, said Solder. Tanis shook her head in frustration, then filled a plate with eggs and sausage and toast for Merry's brother. Merry gestured and warmed them up for Solder with a touch of heat magic.
Solder stared at her for a moment with a look that said, we'll discuss this later.
He shifted to face Daemon, and enjoyed his now hot breakfast while he talked. From what I heard, Vero was flying to the southern clanlands. He hoped to recruit them to attack Daren territory, Solder continued. You know about the dragonship raiders, right?
Daemon nodded and waved a slice of toast to indicate Solder should keep talking.
He felt something when he flew over the quarry on his way to a meeting with the southern clan chiefs, then decided to check out what he'd sensed when he returned.
That must be when he ran into Furcher, said Merry. She told me about losing her mage stone. It must have been during their duel.
Vero came back without his flying disc, said Solder. The other wizards teased him, and he told them to shut up and hope they never ran into a wizard as powerful.
I wonder, said Daemon, rubbing his chin.
Merry distracted the older mage before he realized Einan was the one who'd found Furcher's lost mage stone. She wasn't sure the old wizard had heard Einan tell Furcher he had her artifact back at the quarry a few hours ago.
Did Pharaoh's team collect a lot of mage stones? She asked. Can they train up a lot of new wizards now?
I don't know, said Solder. No one said anything about how many mage stones they'd found. They were grumbling about how Vero had told them the quarry would be undefended, and complaining about being attacked by 24 Daren wizards, a crazy giant with a crossbow, and a wyvern.
There were only 5 Daren wizards, said Merry. I hope the others aren't hurt. The ones who fought the Tamlok wizards and soldiers, I mean, she told her brother.
Furcher and Dothan and the tall crossbowman, thought Merry. But mostly Einan. Her Einan.
I've heard something from one of the palace chambermaids, said Tanis. King Tuathel wasn't sure his younger brother Vero would be able to find a new source of green mage stones. He wanted to hit Daren hard now, while Tamlok still has more crown wizards.
Tamlok has more wizards than Daren? Asked Merry.
More crown wizards, certainly, said Daemon. Many crown wizards left the capital when the old king died. Some, like Dothan, were forced out earlier. There's been a boom in tower building on the edges of the kingdom over the past 2 years. The Daren Conclave has fewer crown wizards now than it did when the old king Daroth the 24th ruled.
Here in Rias, King Tuathel treats his crown wizards well, said Solder. I should know. I serve them enough wine. He trusts his brother to keep them in line, and they fight less among themselves than I've heard is true of the wizards of the Daren Conclave.
Vero was always a skilled manipulator, said Daemon, looking like he'd just bitten into a sour persimmon. He knows how to herd the cats and tigers in his conclave. And you're right about Daren. Our crown wizards would rather score points on each other than work together in the best interests of the kingdom.
That's why you left, eh, old man?
Said Thibaut with a grin to soften his words.
No, said Daemon. I had other reasons to leave court. But it's one factor in why I never returned.
If Vero's raid gained him high-quality green mage stones, could he train new wizards fast enough to make a difference in the battles ahead?
Asked Merry.
He could have used modern training approaches, said Solder.
Madar said Daren mages trained 30 new wizards in 30 days during the last war with Tamlok.
Daemon snorted.
What?
Asked Tanis.
Half of those 30 died in a fortnight, said the old mage.
But how many Darren soldiers didn't die thanks to their sacrifice? Asked Thibaut.
Merry noticed a long scar on the barrel-shaped man's forearm and realized he might have been one of those soldiers. Darren's master mage put his elbows on the table, interlaced his fingers, and cradled his chin on the backs of his hands.
There are other uses for mage stones and mage stone fragments, said Damon cryptically. Even so, the pieces are in play. Dragon ship raiders, southern clanland forces.
And the northern clanlands as well, said Solder.
Barbarians from both clanlands, Damon continued, plus Tamlok's Royal Army and Navy, all arrayed against Darren.
Sounds bleak, said Merry.
But you've left off our greatest disadvantage, old man, said Thibaut.
King Dario, said all five of them in unison. If I were King Tuathel, I'd want to defeat Darren decisively, depose young King Dario, and unite the kingdoms, said Damon. You think rule by a competent Tamlok king would be better than Darren led by our own incompetent monarch? Asked Tanis.
Not historically, said Merry. Quite a few monarchs in Darren lacked wisdom, at least according to what I've read. Somehow the kingdom survived.
She is right, said Damon, though quite a few of those unwise monarchs ended up dead before their time.
Thibaut spoke.
Perhaps that could be arranged for Dario.
Without an heir, said Tanis, there'd be chaos.
Making Tuathel and Vero's plans to conquer the kingdom even easier, said Solder with a sigh.
Merry stopped leaning against her brother's shoulder and sat up straight.
There's got to be a better answer, she said.
There is, said Damon, and it's in Ocaden's province. I've got to get to Nova Eberacum.
Before Merry could fully process Damon's words, there were three loud knocks on the Blue Whale's front door.
Open up, said a gruff voice. City guard.
We should be going, said Damon.
He stood quickly, and so did Merry. Thibaut rose slowly.
Don't worry, said the barrel-shaped man. It's collection day, and the sergeant is making his rounds.
Thibaut casually walked to the front door, while Merry gave Solder a quick hug.
Don't get yourself killed before we have a chance to talk, she told him,
then followed Damon into the kitchen.
Give me a minute, Pawdry, shouted Thibaut,
as he lifted the length of wood barring the door.
I need some time to hide the bodies.
Chapter 7 Fircher and Dothan.
Control of the Five Lakes region, congruent gate access to the Black Rock mines west of the upper reaches of the Brenhaven, and King Dario's firstborn son, said Letitia,
reading the words written on the sheet of fine vellum, like she was reciting a list of things to buy on market day.
What?
Asked Dothan.
She's joking, said Fircher.
She just wanted to make sure you were paying attention. The two women exchanged glances. Fircher was glad Letitia had been joking. Everything else she and her husband had asked for, including an exchange of dignitaries, a polite term for hostages, was a small price to pay for 2 Roma legions and 60 purple wizards on Darren's side against Tamlok. 10,000 well-trained and disciplined foot soldiers, swords, shields and spears would be worth twice their numbers in Darren or Tamlok levies. Darren had plenty of archers and a corps of heavy cavalry that would complement the Eagle People's forces nicely. It would be enough to tip the scales against Tamlok if they could march to Brendinas fast enough to counter the approaching Bifurlander dragonships.
Agreed, said Fircher.
Quite reasonable, said Dothan.
I've always found it more expedient to offer reasonable people reasonable terms at the beginning instead of after prolonged negotiations, said Quinn. You end up in the same place, and it takes much less time.
Without sitting through as many banquets, added Letitia.
Do you think you can convince the young king to sign? Asked Quinn.
He'll sign if I had to put the quill in his hand and threaten to boil his brain if he doesn't, said Fircher.
Dothan laughed.
She'd do it, too, and the conclave would back her, he said. I could pay off half the kingdom's debt by charging a fee for nobles to watch.
I'll send the legion south immediately, said Quinn. With wizards to transport their gear and supplies, they should be in Brendinas by midday on the day after tomorrow.
Or maybe faster, thought Fletcher.
Excellent, said Dothan. The promise of a second hostile force on his doorstep, if he doesn't sign, should make Fletcher's task to convince Daria that much easier.
Where's your gate to Brendinas? Asked Fletcher.
Nearby, said Letitia.
We'll have to take you through blindfolded, of course.
Of course, echoed Fletcher.
Take these tokens, said Letitia,
handing the two Darren wizards small silver discs with three short arms like a caltrop cut through them.
Use them to gain entry into the palace if you take her own gates back to Nova Eboracum. Quinn used caltrops to stop a cavalry charge when he took Timbuktu, so he puts them on everything.
Thank you, said Dothan. He and Fletcher tucked the tokens away. Quinn stood up, revealing every inch of his imposing height, and clapped his hands. A servant approached, carrying two thick canvas bags with handles. Quinn took them.
Before you leave, I have gifts for both of you, he said.
He grinned and gave the first bag to Dothan.
There are two books inside, said the governor. The thicker one has the rules of Quattuor Quadratum. The thinner is a commentary on Quaqua strategy by the Empire's best player. I hope you find them both enlightening.
Thank you, Governor, said Dothan. I'm honored.
And I'm in a hurry, said Fletcher. Can we speed this up? If it matters, I didn't bring you anything.
Letitia laughed. So did her husband. He handed Fletcher the second bag.
I have two books for you as well, Domina, said Quinn. They're brief histories of the royal houses of Daron and Tamloch, with genealogical charts. I hope they prove useful.
You're too kind, said Fletcher. We'll have to come back for them later. For now, bring on the blindfolds. I want to get to King Dario before he's had too much to drink.
Chapter 8 Nude and Einan.
Can wyverns swim? Asked Nude.
We may find out, said Einan.
Nude and Einan had returned for Rocky on Einan's flying disc. The wyvern was following a glowing red ball of solidified sand down the Moraven from the island to Tafern's dock. He was skimming so close to the river's surface that his wingtips touched the water on downstrokes, leaving circular ripples in the liquid. People along the eastern shore were staring at the great black beast and its riders as they made their way south. Soon, they were near their intermediate destination. Einan sent the red ball under Tafern's wooden pier and along the solid stone dock below it. The double doors were open. Rocky tucked in his wings and went through them, skidding his claws along the floor of the storeroom. Einan used the commands Taffy had told him to trigger the gate at the far end of the storeroom, and moments later, the three of them were in the largest pantry off the kitchen in the Melincarrig castle. Rocky fell forward on his belly and scraped his way along the rough stone to let friction absorb some of his velocity. The wyvern stopped inches from the wide door to the kitchen, but Nerd and Einan didn't. They somersaulted over Rocky's body on either side of his long neck and flopped against the wall ahead of them. Rocky bellowed his displeasure. Chi had managed to retain his hold on Rocky's neck. The raconet was chittering at them both in what Einan was sure was his way of laughing.
We made it, said Nerd. I finally managed to get out of Melincarrig, and now I'm here again voluntarily.
The big man stood and extended his hand to help Einan up. Einan was on his back like a turtle, rocking on the slightly concave flying disc strapped to his back. He needed Nerd's assistance.
It's for a good cause, and we won't have to be here long, said Einan.
I know, said Nerd. I just wished my sense of duty wasn't so well developed. I really liked what we saw of Typhod.
So did I, said Einan. And we'll get to see Brendinas soon, too.
He stepped into the kitchen and looked in vain for any sort of large exit to the outside world. Wyverns couldn't fit through normal-sized doorways, at least not without being coated in lard first. He turned to Nud.
How do we get Rocky out of the kitchen?
Through the banquet hall, of course.
There's a banquet hall?
Certainly. It's for festival day feasts and meetings at the Conclave. The kitchen and hall are connected.
I worked in this kitchen for 3 days and never saw any kind of door to a banquet hall, said Einan.
You're not thinking like a wizard, said Nud. It's not a door. It's a congruent gate, wide enough for 10 servants to pass side by side, leading to the banquet hall 1 level up.
And where is this gate to be found? Asked Einan. I didn't think there was enough empty wall space in the kitchen to put one.
Behind the work tables where you've set up your distilled water system, said Nud. When Daemon is hosting the conclave, we move those work tables into the centre of the kitchen to provide extra prep space.
But there was a sink next to the one I was using, protested Einan. They'd have to relocate the plumbing.
You're still thinking like a farm boy, said Nud with a smile. Water and drains are provided by congruencies as well.
Einan shook his head, both to clear it after his tumble and to help recalibrate his brain for the many ramifications of magic for everyday life. He walked back to Rocky and rubbed the wyvern's jaw. The beast's head and neck extended into the corridor outside the pantry.
Are you doing well, boy? He asked. No harm done from that landing.
The wyvern tilted his head and stuck out his tongue, licking Einan's face before it could put up a shield. It felt like sandpaper and smelled like a doused campfire, but wasn't as unpleasant as it might have been. Einan rubbed Rocky's eye ridges as the wyvern leaned down further and the big beast made contented rumbles deep in its throat.
I guess that question's answered, said Einan.
Help me move tables, said Nud. It will go faster with two of us.
They entered the kitchen proper and crossed to a wall filled with work tables near where Einan's solidified sound distilling apparatus was still dripping out sulfur-free water. Together, Nud and Einan moved tables until they'd cleared a 16-foot section of bare wall.
You have to say, Agori Drus, said Nud.
Einan reached out to connect with both his mage stones and repeated the phrase Nud had given him. A thin blue rectangle that looked like a painted fresco briefly sparkled and outlined a wide opening. Then the wall shimmered away, and a hall large enough to seat 200 guests appeared in front of him. It was mostly empty, with disassembled trestle tables and benches neatly stacked against one wall. A tall pair of doors were at the opposite end. Einan assumed they led out into the castle's courtyard. The hall's ceiling was framed with huge wooden beams, carved and painted, and the floor was some sort of polished white stone veined with blue. It looked like a place to hold royal balls. Einan had read about them in Robin Goodfellow's Peregrinations.
Do wizards dance?
Einan wondered. It would be fun to dance with Merry if they do. He resolved to contact Merry with his ring tonight, to make sure she was safe, which she probably was. She was with Daemon, after all. But he missed her, and wanted to hear her voice.
Einan, asked Nud, are you still in Melin Carrig, or are you back on the river with that baron's daughter?
Tease me all you want, said Einan, as he put his reverie on hold. You're the one enraptured by a farmer's daughter.
With cute freckles, said Nud.
And a temper. You haven't seen that yet.
Perhaps I'll have a chance to, said Nud. You help Rocky turn the corner and enter the banquet hall. I'll go upstairs and get some sacks for the gold.
Einan watched the big man take the stairs two at a time, then went back to join Rocky in the largest pantry. The wyvern was happily watching Chi dance in the short hall in front of him. The raconette was nibbling on a giant bulb of garlic, almost bigger than his mouth. Einan noticed Chi had added a bag labelled as dried plums from another pantry to go with the dried cherries he'd been given in Haywall. He resolved not to sleep anywhere near the little scamp that night.
"Come along, Rocky. Let's get you out to the kitchen," said Einan.
He used treats made from solidified sound and encouraging words to convince the wyvern to contort his large body around the angle required to move from pantry to kitchen, then led Rocky over to stand in front of the congruent gate to the banquet hall. He heard Nud's feet on the stairs.
"I've got the bags," said the big man when he reached the bottom.
"Those are pillowcases," said Einan.
"They're bags for gold now," said Nud.
"Ready to go?"
"Almost," said Einan. "Is there any parchment and a pen, or slate and chalk, or wax and a stylus close at hand?"
"All of that is back upstairs in Daemon's study," said Nud. "You want to leave a message?"
"In case Daemon comes back, or Furcher and Dothan show up."
"There's no chance of my mother appearing, and nothing to write with, so we'd best be on our way."
"Just a minute," said Einan.
He found the flour bin and scattered a thick layer across one of the tables used for preparing meals. Einan used his finger to write a note. Getting gold to bribe raiders not to attack.
Short and sweet, said Nud, and it gets your point across.
Short, maybe, said Einan, but not sweet. If that's what I'd wanted, I would have written the message with honey. Nud shook his head and laughed.
Mount up and lead Rocky across the hall, said the big man. I'll open the doors at the far end.
Get away from that flower, Chi, said Einan. The raconette climbed up to Rocky's neck. Nud walked through the gate ahead of them and opened the doors to the courtyard. Einan found his seat on the wyvern's back and guided the big beast through the banquet hall and outside. Nud closed the doors, clambered up and got himself secured. Rocky pranced around the castle's courtyard, flexing his wings and stretching after squeezing through the narrow storeroom and hall earlier. Einan created a ball of tasty solidified sand magic for the wyvern, but his mind kept drifting back to Mary. Maybe he'd contact her in an hour or two, instead of waiting until tonight. There'd be plenty of time for a call while they were waiting for the gold dust to accumulate in his collection cylinders.
Mary must really be in my head, thought Einan, as he directed Rocky upward after the ball of solidified sand. I almost thought I saw her waving from one of the castle windows.
Chapter 9 Damon and Mary.
It stinks, said Mary, and it's cold.
Welcome to Melincarrig and the Academy, said Damon.
Do you live here? Asked Mary. How do you stand it?
I stand it quite well, child. It's been my home for 45 years.
Damon's tone was prickly at first, then it softened.
You'll get used to the smell.
I doubt that, said Mary.
She turned around and saw a tall archway painted on the wall behind her. Hundreds of green vines and acanthus leaves were twining around arched faux granite stones. It seemed a fitting representation for a congruent gateway to somewhere in Tamloch. Mary watched as the dark cellar of the Blue Whale faded out, replaced by a painted scene of a cascading, ribbon-like waterfall next to colourful cliffs. The gate had closed. Mary started to shiver. It was almost freezing in the narrow room, which didn't have a carpet or rushes on the floor. Damon was standing beside an open door, leading out to some sort of corridor.
"Come along," said the old wizard. "We're headed for my study, and I'll light a fire if Nuda's brought up any firewood."
"Fetcher's son lives here?"
asked Mary, as she followed Damon down a dim hallway.
"He does," said Damon.
They went down a winding staircase and along another hall, before Damon opened a door and entered a room. He held the door for Mary, then closed it against the chill. They were in a much warmer room, in furnishings, if not yet in temperature. A fireplace sat between two tall windows overlooking a courtyard. In the centre of the room was a large desk, overflowing with inkpots and leaves of parchment. Several quills were arrayed haphazardly next to a penknife with a blue stone handle. An oval two-sided mirror in a rotating gold stand was in one corner of the desk. She was pleased to see that firewood had been set in the fireplace.
"Light the fire," said Damon. "I've got to learn the latest news from Nova Eberacum before I gate there."
Mary focused her will and her mage stone to heat the tinder under the logs in the fireplace until it burst into flame. Tongues of fire reached up to lick at the logs. The study got warmer immediately. Damon pulled the mirror closer to him and muttered something too low for Mary to hear. Then he spoke louder.
"Also scout ahead before you use a congruent gate if you can," said Damon. "It's unwise to jump into an unknown situation."
"Is that an epigram for your next book?"
Damon found a small piece of blank parchment in the chaos on his desk, dipped a quill in an inkpot, and jotted down a few words.
"It is now," he said.
An image was forming in the mirror. A hooded woman who could only be seen in shades of grey.
"Is that you, Tempora?" asked Damon.
"Who else would it be on our private connection, old man?" asked the woman. "Though for all you know, I could be Letitia."
Mary listened closely, without allowing any part of her person to show in the mirror. She smiled at the code name. A grey lady in Nova Eberacum named Tempora was more than a bit melodramatic.
"Letitia would be more honey and less vinegar, dear lady," said Damon.
Speaking of the provincial spymaster and her husband, do you have any news in the palace? Is there anything I should know before I gate in to reconnoitre?
First Virtue and Dothan, then you? Asked Tempura. Nova Eboracum will need to open an inn just for visiting senior Daron wizards.
The two of them are in the city.
Not anymore, said Tempura. They just left. My contact is one of the governor's servants, and he said they were just sent through a gate to Brandinus after having breakfast with Quintilius and Letitia. He also overheard something about getting King Dario to agree to terms for help from Occident's province, or having his brains boiled.
I can imagine Fircher saying that very thing, said Damon. It sounds like they're a step ahead of me, and I won't need to go to Nova Eboracum after all.
If the young king gets mulish, it might be wiser for you to head for Brandinus as well, said the shadowed woman. My man also heard talk of 2 legions and 60 wizards marching and flying there, trying to arrive ahead of the dragon ship raiders.
Dario doesn't listen to the conclave or his privy council, said Damon. Why would he listen to me?
There is a certain mystique that goes along with being the near-mythical master mage of the kingdom, said Tempura. You could be a subtle voice of reason, appealing to his ego, to counterbalance Fircher's more direct approach.
From what I've heard, Dario and reason parted ways when he took the throne, said Damon. I'm more inclined to hold him down while Fircher fries him, if I could stand to be within a furlong of the woman.
Will you ever tell me what your feud with Fircher is about? Asked Tempura.
No, said Damon. It's personal.
You didn't sleep with her, did you?
Merry watched Damon's face turn red and saw a vein throbbing in his neck. Then he caught himself and controlled his response.
No, that's ridiculous.
I'm not that much older than Virtue, and I'd sleep with you, said Tempura.
You just want to count me on your tally board, said Damon. Have you slept with more than half the men in the Provincial Senate yet?
What makes you think I'd restrict myself to the men? Asked Tempura.
My mistake, said Damon.
Mary smiled and made sure not to lean too close to see more of Tempura's face in the mirror. She knew the woman would use her presence as an excuse to tease Damon further.
Thank you for your kind offer, Damon continued. If my heart had room for another, I'd be glad to take you up on it.
Your loss, said Tempura. My offer remains open, if you ever change your mind.
Damon smiled and nodded, and shook his head the same way her father did when Merry asked Derry about his years in court after the previous war between Daran and Tamloch.
What good was having a life if there were large parts of it you wanted to forget? Thought Merry.
After a few seconds to reflect, she considered how she'd feel if anything happened to Einan, and felt more charitable toward Damon and Hadar.
"Thanks again for the information," said Damon. "It will keep me from making an unnecessary trip to Nova Eboracum."
"Glad to assist," said Tempura. "Though if you changed your mind about my offer, you might find frequent trips here necessary."
"Has anyone ever told you you're incorrigible?" asked Damon.
"I can't remember a day when someone hasn't," said Tempura.
"Let me know if you ever add Quintilius Martius Africanus to your tally sheet."
Merry was pleased to hear a smile back in the old wizard's voice after his earlier melancholy.
"I'm adventurous, not suicidal," said Tempura. "Letitia will cover my naked corpse in plaster and set it up on a plinth near the palace baths to remind her husband of his folly if I tried."
"I didn't think Letitia was the jealous type," said Damon.
"She's not," said Tempura. "The plaster statue option is only if I try to sleep with him behind her back. As spymaster for the province, she has certain professional standards to uphold."
"Good to know," said Damon, chuckling under his breath. "You never fail to amuse me, dear lady."
"I'd do more than that if you'd..."
"I've got to go. Best regards to your family."
"Goodbye, you old..."
Damon cut contact with a gesture, and Tempura's shadowy image vanished from the mirror. He looked over at Merry and saw her grinning.
"What?"
he said.
"I always forget that old people have sex, too."
"Every new generation thinks it invented the concept without thinking through the reason for their own existence," said the old mage.
He found the same piece of parchment he'd scribbled on earlier and wrote a sentence.
"There. Now that will be in my next book, too."
"When do we leave for Brandinus?" asked Merry.
We don't, said Damon. I do. You can stay here and keep out of trouble.
Well, that's unlikely.
Damon frowned at her, then realized her statement was true.
You can come to Brendina's if you'll do what Nud usually does for me.
And what is that? Asked Mary.
He tends to all my needs, so I can focus on important matters of wizardry.
He's your servant, you mean?
That's one way to put it.
You do seem to need looking after, said Mary. If that's what it takes to get away from this cold, foul-smelling place, I'll be your servant until Furcher's son reclaims the position.
Fine, said Damon.
Fine, Mary repeated.
She walked over to the tall windows on either side of the fireplace. It felt liberating to move freely around Damon's study, now that he wasn't connected to Tempura in Nova Eberacum. Morning sun was streaming in, and she raised her hand to interpose it between her eyes and the light, but was too late. She looked directly into the sun for half a breath. Dozens of black spots danced in front of her eyes, temporarily blinding her. Mary lowered her hand and raised it again to see if she could get a better angle for protection, but the damage had been done. She thought she might have seen movement out of the corner of her eye in the courtyard below, but when her vision cleared, the cobblestone-covered space was empty.
No matter, she thought. There can't be anyone else here. The castle is clearly deserted. It hasn't been properly cleaned in months.
She couldn't get to Brendina's soon enough. Chapter 10 Furcher and Dothan.
When can I take off this stupid blindfold? Grumbled Furcher, as carriage wheels bumped over cobblestones.
Practice patience, said Dothan. I can't see either, but I can smell flowers and horse manure. We're between the royal gardens and the royal stables. I expect they'll be letting us out soon.
Or we could be next to an undertaker's wagon, said Furcher.
It won't be long now,
said a young woman's soft voice, one of Letitia's agents in Brendina's, most likely. Outside the carriage, they could hear the bustling noise of thousands of people in the capital going about their daily lives. Drovers shouted at their horses, wagon wheels squeaked, and merchants cried their wares. They were familiar sounds to Furcher, but less so to Dothan, who'd only recently returned to court. After another minute of the cacophony of urban life, the driver called to his horses and the carriage stopped. Dothan and Furcher heard the door to their carriage open and its stairs drop down. Gentle hands removed their blindfolds. They belonged to a slim woman in a blue gown with white trim, wearing a hat with a narrow circular brim and an almost opaque white veil. Her face was completely hidden.
"It's time for you to leave," she said. "The gentleman was correct. You're not far from the palace. Get the king's signature as soon as possible. Letitia told me to tell you that the legions can march back to Nova Eberacum as easily as they can march to Brendina's, if Dario doesn't agree."
"Tell Roma's mistress of spies her message is received," said Furcher over her shoulder, as she carefully stepped down.
"Have a good day," said Dothan, when he made his exit.
"And you," said the woman.
Dothan suspected she was laughing behind her veil.
The woman pulled the carriage's folding stairs up and its door down. The conveyance creaked its way along Garden Street and turned onto Royal Boulevard, joining a dozen of others exactly like it on the busy thoroughfare.
"Well," said Furcher, smoothing her robes, "I'm glad that piece of spycraft theatre is over."
The palace was only a block away, its ornate yet indefensible form standing out, but somehow less than the imposing stone walls of Darren Castle on the heights above it. That was a fortress.
"So am I," said Dothan, blinking in the bright sunlight while he got his bearings. "I was right. We're next to the royal gardens."
"But not on the side near the royal stables," said Furcher. "It's an understandable error. There's so much horse manure in the gutters, every street smells like a stable's dung pile."
"That's one of King Dario's new economies," said Dothan. "It was instituted a few weeks ago, just after you left for Points West. Streets are cleaned once a week instead of every day."
"But the smell," said Furcher, "and the flies. It will make half the city sick."
"The savings are supposed to be substantial, according to the new exchequer. I'll fry his brain too when I get to the palace."
"Her brain," said Dothan. "The old exchequer stepped down in protest. This one knows better, but when Dario said he needed more revenue, she had to get it from somewhere."
"Quite a few somewheres, it would seem," said Furcher, taking in the run-down state of the gardens. The plants inside the garden's waist-high walls looked like they hadn't been pruned or weeded. Dothan was surprised by Furch's expression. It wasn't the disgusted look he expected, and seemed more like pride. He resolved to talk to her about it later. "If it's a choice between gardeners and guardsmen, I'll take guardsmen," he said. Dothan leaned over the garden's low wall and pulled a red flower on a thorny vine, close enough to inhale its perfume. "No time to stop and smell the roses, old friend," said Furcher. "We can use the south gate. It's time for me to knock some heads."
"I thought you were boiling brains," said Dothan.
"I may do both."
"Go away," said King Dario to an approaching servant. "I told you, no interruptions."
His shaved head glistened with sweat as he tried to concentrate on three games of Sharmat simultaneously. Some said the young king kept his scalp shaved because his hair was dark, not red like his father's or grandfather's or the old king's before it went white. Others said Dario wanted to set his own style and make that as different from the old king's reign as possible. The sweat on the young king's scalp may have also had something to do with the revealing gowns worn by his three young opponents, comely daughters of noble Daron families, all hoping to be the kingdom's next queen. Dario had selected them for their skill at Sharmat, not their looks, but at 18 he did have a young man's appreciation for the female form. One of the young women, in a wine-coloured dress, was giving him a good game. He needed to focus on squares and pieces, not curves. The servant hadn't left.
"What?"
said Dario.
"It's Furcher," she said. "I'm Dothan, from the Conclave. They said their matter was urgent."
The woman in the wine-coloured dress advanced her royal advisor. Dario would be in check in three moves. Reluctantly, he turned up his palms.
"I'm sorry, ladies, but we will have to continue our games after I meet with a pair of dreary old wizards."
The three women withdrew. The one who'd just moved her royal advisor looked over her shoulder as she left the young king's study, to be sure he knew he was in trouble. Dario gave her a small smile. She'd earned it by her play. Once the women were gone, he instructed the servant to show his new guests in. Furcher entered with a quick stride, her blue robe swirling. She held the parchment she'd received in Nova Eboracum. Dothan made a more sedate entrance. They stood on the far side of the game boards, next to the chairs the Sharmat players had previously occupied. The door to Dario's study remained open. Furcher was sure more than one servant would be listening to everything that was said.
"What does the Conclave want this time?"
asked Dario, waving a hand holding a previously captured castle.
"Money for rope to lasso the moon to bring it down to our enemies?"
"Nothing so dramatic," said Furcher.
"More pragmatic," said Dothan.
"Something that might keep you on your throne past the summer solstice," said Furcher. Dario slammed the Sharmat piece he was holding down on the nearest table and jumped to his feet. His face was red and so was his scalp. Dothan thought he might kick over the game board at any second.
"What are you talking about? Who wants to take my throne?"
"Tamlong," said Dothan quietly. Dario shook his head and turned from Dothan to Furcher. He gestured to the parchment she held.
"Is that what's supposed to keep me on my throne?"
he said, seeming to spit the words. "The Eagle people have offered their support in our war against Tamlong," said Furcher quietly. "These are their terms. I've heard them, and they're quite reasonable. You should sign this document and accept them."
"Why should I?" asked Dario. "What could the provincial legions give me that my own armies and wizards could not?"
"Victory," said Furcher.
"Ha!"
said Dario.
"I'm sure it's a plot by Ocadin's province to have us give up territory without a fight. Daran will treat Tamlok the way it always has, on the field of battle."
"That's not precisely true, Your Majesty," said Dothan.
In the times before the old king's reign, Daran often lost clashes with Tamlok, like at the battle of...
"You're not helping,"
said Furcher, tapping Dothan's heel with the side of her foot.
"Two legions and 60 wizards are already on their way to Brendinas from Nova Eboracum," said Dothan.
Furcher tapped Dothan's heel again and muttered under her breath.
"Still not helping." "The Eagle people are invading," shouted Dario. "Why didn't you tell me that in the first place?"
"Because they're not invading," said Furcher. "They're coming to help. At least they will be if you sign the agreement."
"Get out,"
said Dario, louder than before.
You wizards, and the whole conclave are useless.
At least read the agreement before discounting it, said Dothan. Furcher extended the document, and Dario leaned across the gaming tables and snatched it.
Fine, he said, showing less anger. I'll take it under advisement and let you know my decision in a week or two.
But the legions will be here the day after tomorrow, said Dothan.
And Darren's forces will counter them if they try to invade our territory, said Dario.
He pointed at Dothan.
You're not worth my time. What part of get out don't you understand?
Dothan turned toward the door.
You can stay, said the young king to Furcher. I need your help with a love charm.
Yes, your majesty, said Furcher. What happened to boiling his brains? Muttered Dothan under his breath as he left.
And shut the door!
Dario shouted to Dothan. The kingdom's senior crown wizard and acting master mage shut the door and was glad there wasn't a dog to kick on the way out to release his anger. Roush, his canine familiar, would never forgive him. Furcher crossed to the door and bolted it. Dario walked around the Sharmat boards and joined her. They stood a few feet apart on a circular carpet woven with thousands of tiny flowers in shades of blue. Furcher created an opaque bubble of solidified sand around them and nodded at Dario. Only then did the two embrace, hugging each other like friends who'd been apart for too long. When the embrace ended, they stepped back and smiled.
How did I do? Asked Dario. Was I a suitable monster?
You played your part well, said Furcher. Tamlok is acting before they're completely ready, and we got everything we wanted out of Quintilius and Letitia.
Excellent, said Dario,
carrying the parchment to his desk and dipping a quill in an inkpot.
Where do I sign?
Chapter 11 Nud and Einan.
Do you remember how to get to the right spot on the river?
Asked Nud, as they flew west from the castle.
Even if I didn't, it appears that Rocky knows the way,
Einan replied. The wyvern was confidently flying high above a broad grassy plain covered with thousands of dark splotches. The splotches seemed to be moving.
Are those wizens? Asked Einan.
One of the bigger herds, said Nud. There are 7 of them in the area.
That's a lot of wizens, said Einan. Are they dangerous?
Only if something spooks them and they stampede, Nud replied.
I'm glad we're high enough up not to cause problems.
Me too, said Einan, though part of him thought a wizened stampede would be something worth seeing. Rocky started to descend. Soon he was circling a familiar stretch of the Melencarrig River, marked by a beach of smooth, rounded stones and weathered driftwood. The big black beast landed and settled into a spot in the sun that already had a circular depression in the scattered stones from the last time he'd napped there a few days ago. That's when Einan's creative wizardry with solidified sound constructs had allowed him to collect a pound of gold in a few hours. He'd needed the precious metal to cast the setting for his mage stone.
I've got the bags for the gold dust, said Nud,
as he climbed down from Rocky's back.
I've got the basket of food Braith gave us this morning, said Einan.
Chi had climbed farther up Rocky's neck and was sprawled between 2 protruding neck scales, soaking up spring sun. He'd perked up when Einan had mentioned food, but the Raconet closed his eyes when Einan didn't take anything out of the basket. They were all lucky the weather had changed and the morning was warm, since the humans had left their heavy coats back in Haywall.
Lazy bones, said Einan, addressing his familiar.
The Raconet waved one of his front paws, but didn't open his eyes. Nud stuck his tongue out at Chi, but the Raconet was oblivious.
Looks like everything is up to us, said Einan.
Up to you, you mean, said Nud. You're the wizard. I'll fend off any attacking griffins.
Nud took off his backpack, detached his crossbow, and placed 6 quarrels in easy reach on a larger rock. Einan took off his own pack and put it on top of a 2nd big rock where his flying disc tipped back and forth on the dome in its centre. He stretched his physical muscles, then his magical capabilities, by crafting one of the grooved cylinders of solidified sound he'd previously used to collect gold dust. The structure formed easily, as if his blue magestone remembered what it had made before.
Using both his red and blue mage stones, Einan duplicated the construct over and over again. Soon, he had 5 rows of 10 rotating cylinders crossing the river from one bank to the other, each row a dozen yards apart. Nud nodded his approval.
"That was faster than last time," he said.
"It's easier when you know what you're doing," Einan replied.
"That's true for lots of things," said Nud.
"How much gold do you think we'll need to bribe the Bifalanders?" asked Einan.
"Tavern said King Tuathel gave them 10 pounds to attack," Nud replied.
50 should be enough then," said Einan.
Nud smiled when Einan turned away to watch the cylinders turn in the river.
"More than enough," he said. "It's a good thing you're giving this gold to Bifalanders."
"Why?" asked Einan. "Wouldn't it be helpful to give King Dario gold to help the war effort?"
"I don't think so," said Nud. "If we give the gold to King Bajani's people, they'll mostly make ornaments and jewellery out of it. Rings and torques and earrings and such. Most of the gold won't be used to buy things."
"Why would it be a problem if people bought things with gold?" asked Einan.
He tweaked the locations of 2 of the cylinders to make sure they were getting enough rich sediments.
"What happens when you have a great harvest?" asked Nud. "If there's lots of wheat, the price of wheat goes down, right?"
"What's that got to do with gold?" asked Einan. "Back in Haywall, if there's lots of wheat in one year, we store it in case of a bad harvest in a future year."
"My example might not work as well in places like the Coombe," said Nud. "Let's try something else, like books in Tyford or Brendinas."
"I like books," said Einan. "Mary told me there's a whole street of booksellers in Tyford. I wish I could have stopped there when we were in town."
"Some other time, I'm sure," said Nud. "If someone brings 10 pounds of gold to a city and starts to spend it, the price of books and almost everything else will go up."
"Why?" asked Einan.
"Because the person with the gold can outbid anyone else for whatever they want."
"If they buy a lot of books, maybe I could convince them to loan some to me, so I could read them," said Einan.
"This isn't working the way I'd hoped," said Nud.
He rubbed his forehead.
"Let me try again. What if you wanted to buy books, and every time you offered to buy one, a person with lots of gold bought it for twice the price you could pay?"
"Then the bookseller would have more money to get more books."
"That you couldn't afford to buy," said Nud.
"Oh," said Einan.
"And what if it was bread instead of books?"
"I did oatmeal," Einan answered.
"But the oatmeal is more expensive too."
"Then I'd trap rabbits and squirrels and forage for tubers."
"Not if you lived in a city like Tyford or Brendinas," said Nud. "With a lot more gold around, city people couldn't afford to feed themselves."
"So they'd have to move to the country," said Einan. "I don't know if I'd like a lot of city people moving to the Coombe."
"If we don't give King Dario any gold," said Nud, "you can avoid that problem."
"I think I understand now," said Einan. "Though if the city people were willing to move farther west and settle in the borderlands, that would work too. They just have to build stockades to protect themselves from raids from the southern clanlands."
Nud rubbed a spot above his eyes.
"I think my head hurts."
"Mine too," said Einan.
He checked the 50 gold dust collection cylinders again. They were all concentrating gold effectively and doing so much faster than before. Perhaps there was something about having them in rows that churned up more flecks of the precious metal from the mud of the riverbed. The 2 young men stood quietly, watching the water flow, and the cylinders turned for a few minutes. Already, a sizable collection of gold dust had settled into each cylinder. Einan shaded his eyes against the early morning sun and spoke. His words came out as puffs of warmth in the cold air.
"Why do you stay in Melancarrig, working for Daemon? It must be boring without anyone close to your age around, and Daemon's not exactly cheerful company."
"I've asked myself that question more times than there are stars in the sky," said Nud. "The simple answer is, Daemon and my mother both said it wasn't safe for me to leave."
Einan nodded.
"Is there a complicated answer?"
"All the rest of my answers are complicated," Nud replied. "I feel like I'm standing on top of one of the cliffs by the falls near the castle, waiting to grow wings so I can jump.
Have you ever considered learning how to be a wizard? Asked Einan. Your mother is very talented that way.
The one thing I